Perspective with Jesse Zurawell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I am Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour, and I am very pleased to be joined once again today by somebody I always enjoy speaking with, somebody from whom I always learn something new when I speak to him, and he is Alex Craner. Alex has worked as a market analyst, and he's traded financial and commodity derivatives for over 20 years. So he has a very astute knowledge of markets, of economics, of finance, and he's also a very insightful geopolitical analyst as well. He is the author of several books, most recently Grand Deception. And without further ado, Alex, welcome back to Perspective. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
It's always a pleasure, Jesse, and thank you for the invite.
Absolutely. So I want to start with an announcement that was recently made by the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, in concert with the World Bank. And essentially, the IMF / World Bank cut their global growth outlook, which is something that they put out on an annual basis, if I'm not mistaken. And we can get into the details of that cut in their outlook, but the short of it is that they're blaming Putin and, quote, social unrest and global instability, unquote. So what is your take on that new outlook from the IMF and World Bank?
Well, you know, this is largely exercise in perception management. Okay, so I never take these figures that are produced by IMF, World Bank, by the Fed, by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, any official government bureaucracy. Part of their job is perception management, expectations management, and they generate numbers that kind of prepare people for the rough weather ahead, but at the same time, they don't want to precipitate a panic. I think that, you know, this is the same kind of a story as a 6-7 months ago when the Fed was telling you that the inflation was only transitory, that it's nothing, don't worry about it. When they tell you that the economic growth is going to pick up and things like that. So we can set the numbers aside. Now, it is clear that we are headed for very, very rough waters. And we're facing structural changes. Putin is about the last person they should be blaming, but of course they will not be blaming themselves, you know, so they will find the blame anywhere they can. And I expect that somewhere along the line, they will start blaming greedy corporations and speculators, because this is invariably one of the groups that ends up getting the blame for poor performance of the economy. The reason why we're heading for rough waters is because there has been 12, 13 years since 2009, we've had this quantitative easing. So Federal Reserve just printing money on an open-ended plan and accelerating the printing presses. And this, in addition to generating a lot of debt, a lot of purchasing power without any kind of a backing, also engenders misallocation of resources, because, you know, this is not just shot out of the helicopters to the public, as Ben Bernanke used to say. This is allocated to the institutions that they control, meaning systemically important banks. And from there, it goes to fund their pet projects. And that has been part of the Great Reset, because and a very important part of the Great Reset is to shift the developed world economies from fossil fuels to the quote-unquote renewable energy sources. And so mm-hmm. you've seen a huge amount of capital chasing windmills and solar power plants and whatnot. And after they've done this for a long time, it turns out it's not good enough, and it wasn't a very good idea to begin with. And so now we find ourselves in a very systemic crisis, which is not just a crisis of money and absurd levels of debt that are absolutely unpayable. Mm-hmm. We're finding ourselves short on resources. We're short on everything, energy, metals, and we're heading into a very serious food crisis. And it seems to me that the people who are really in charge are not only too late to mitigate this crisis, they're taking positive steps to make it worse. And that
yes.
requires an explanation. So I see the pronouncements from World Bank and IMF almost as noise. I look through their charts, I look through their bullet points, and I kind of dismiss it because there's more agenda than facts to it.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. And when you look at the numbers they put out, even though they're talking about a decrease in global growth, the numbers still look strikingly optimistic given the reality happening around us that we can see with our eyes, that we hear in the news, that we read in the news every day, that we even see on supermarket shelves, for example. And there is a quote in this report from the IMF's chief economist that I found very telling with regard to just how disconnected from reality the international banking cartel is, or the perception it's putting out there of just how disconnected from reality it is, because it's hard to tell sometimes whether this cartel is really disconnected from reality, or if, as you said, it's a perception that they're managing. But here's the quote. Quote, just as a durable recovery from the pandemic-induced global economic collapse appeared in sight, the war has created the very real prospect that a large part of the recent gains will be erased, unquote. And I read that and thought a lot of things, but the pandemic-induced global economic collapse was obviously a man-made global economic collapse. There was no pandemic to create it. And furthermore, the very real prospect that a large part of the recent gains will be erased made me think, what recent gains? We've seen, as you mentioned just before, since at least last autumn, problems with supply chains, problems with inflation, and so on. I don't know if you have any comment on this quote in particular, but it strikes me as, it strikes me in a lot of ways.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what it is. And I'm glad to hear that you're actually reading those reports between the lines rather than on the face value, because it is, what you pointed out is exactly the perception management, and they tell you there's been a limited recovery. Well, yeah, it was very, very limited, if that, and I don't know what part of it was recovery other than, a much, much bigger military budget. Pfizer and Moderna, you know, went gangbusters. You had the stock market explode. Basically, stock market going up is not a sign of a healthy economy. It's the sign that the Federal Reserve is easing. In other words, they're printing money and throwing it at banks who are buying up the ETFs and they're buying up corporate bonds, and all of this money is ultimately flowing into the stock markets because, you know, companies are doing a lot of their own share repurchases, and you know, there's a very, very strong established relationship between quantitative easing and the stock market levels, and that relationship has been pretty stable and reliable for over 100 years now, right? So when the central bank opens the spigots, the stock markets rise. When they tighten, the stock markets fall. And this has been shown on I think about 15 cycles of easing and tightening since before the 1920s boom onwards. And the relationship is so predictable that people who know what they're doing also know the effect that that's going to have. Well, you know, are the American people better off? Are they feeling more prosperous? Are their job prospects better? Have their wages improved? It doesn't feel like it because we have now suddenly much increased pressures on unionization, which is a sure sign that people are unhappy with the way they're treated and with the salaries that they're being paid. We see that companies are having a very difficult time finding employees because the wages are so low that people reckon it's not even worth going to work. You know, they would be able to fill those jobs if they paid the people properly, but you know, they don't have to, so they still don't. And then they complain, well, we cannot find people to employ. So this recovery is a perception-managed recovery. And the slowdown is, again, exercising expectation management to prepare people for, a rough patch that's ahead of us, but it's going to be very, very rough. You know, this is not your garden variety economic recession. This seems like it's going to be on the scale of 1930s depression. You know, after the after the 1929 stock market bust, there was a proper depression which lasted throughout the 1930s, and then only started. The recovery only started to happen with the U.S. entry into the World War II.
Right. And already in the U.S., we're seeing some very drastic hits being taken by farmers in particular with regard to this controlled demolition of the economy. I think we can agree that it's a controlled demolition, particularly coming from Western Empire. And specifically, Union Pacific recently announced that it's going to, it seems, arbitrarily cut the number of train cars that it uses to transport all kinds of goods, but in this case, fertilizer for farmers. So there's going to be a shortage in the availability of fertilizer for farmers in the U.S. who are already suffering from other shortages and have had to delay their planting season. And it seems that there's no explanation coming from Union Pacific as to why this is happening. It's just an arbitrary move that seems in line with pursuing a controlled demolition of Western economies. And we're seeing similar moves being made in Europe with the sanctions against Russia, and then this announcement of the full-on embargo of Russian oil by the EU. So I want to talk about those developments. We need to take a quick break at this moment, but more with Alex Craner after this.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Many dogs and cats spend endless days indoors staring at the wall, living for the moment when you will come home and tell them you love them, take them out, and make a fuss over them. Dogs and cats need physical exercise and mental stimulation, things to do and think about in order to be healthy and happy. Please set time aside for them and give them a real life and real love. For more information, please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals at 757-622-PETA. Or helpinganimals.com. That's helpinganimals.com.
My therapist had told me that I needed to go to AA meetings, but I wasn't sure whether I wanted to go because I didn't want to be an alcoholic. That was not what I wanted to grow up and be. I didn't want to go to AA, but I did, and it wasn't what I expected by any means. It was friendly. I could feel it. I mean, I could feel the happiness. It's really great.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app to find a meeting near you.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Perspective. I am your host, Jesse Zerwell, and I've been speaking with Alex Craner. Alex is a market analyst who has traded financial and commodity derivatives for over 20 years. He is the creator of the iSystem and founder of iSystem Trend Following. He is also the author of several books, most recently Grand Deception. And you can follow him and his work at his excellent website, thenakedhedgie.com. And Alex, just before we went to break there, I brought up some specific examples of what I believe to be a controlled demolition of Western economies that's being pursued by the international banking cartel. And I mentioned the fertilizer crisis here in the US, and then also this announcement by the EU to impose a full embargo on Russian oil, but only after the upcoming French elections, which, as Pat Henningsen alluded to in the news update at the bottom of the hour, is a very cynical move, but very much in line with how the international banking cartel and then its minions work. They really don't care about the common man, quote unquote, and they're really letting it show at this point and making no bones about it. But I wanted to get your take on these manufactured scarcities that are have been coming our way, and they're going to keep coming our way, and they're going to get worse.
Well, unfortunately, we have to kind of try to guess at what the agenda is. You know, they're giving us a lot of elements to understand it because, mm-hmm. you know, the World Economic Forum has published a great deal of materials about how they envision this great reset and the fourth industrial revolution. But, you know, this entails some extremely painful transitions. And obviously, yeah, I fully agree with you. They do treat humanity as vermin. And part of the game is depopulation, including with everything else. So yeah, they absolutely right. do not care. I can tell you that I have some secondhand testimonies from, let's say, friends who are bankers in New York who frequent these social gatherings and parties, rub shoulders with other bankers. And there's, you know, like among some of them, there's open talk about culling the herd, exactly in those words, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's illusory to think that they have any regard for the suffering of the ordinary people, you know. Unfortunately, that falls on us. But to understand what's going on, we have to understand their agenda. And I think that part of that agenda, you know, you mentioned Union Pacific and why they are arbitrarily reducing the number of carts that they drive, they move around the country. Well, we can also ask ourselves, why is Bill Gates buying up such enormous amounts of farmland and what he intends to do with that farmland? Why is he investing in artificial meat? Why are there large factories being built in France and I presume elsewhere as well, whose purpose is to farm insects for human consumption? Why are supermarkets in France? I'm talking about my own, what I came across myself. Why are they bringing these snacks of crickets and other insects into the supermarket aisles and putting them in these attractive, sexy packaging to make it, I don't know, I guess to kind of break the resistance barrier that people have towards the idea of eating bugs. And I think that there's a reason why we have a hardwired revulsion towards the idea of eating bugs, even though in some culture they do eat them, but I don't know that they're a staple actually. And
so you've actually seen this on the shelves you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Several varieties of insects. I think they were, you know, they were packaged in these small, attractive-looking boxes, and I think they were like dried, dehydrated, you know, so like some kind of a crunchy insect snack. Of course, I think that, you know, apart from some people maybe buying a handful of these things just out of curiosity, I don't think anybody bought any of them because they just sat there on those shelves for weeks until they removed them finally. But, you know, the parasite class in charge of this great reset doesn't care what we think, what we prefer. We see that in the United States and the United Kingdom, the government is offering money to people to get out of farming and to quit cultivating the land. We've seen that in Belgium recently. The meat processors have been reducing output for, you know, whatever reason. You know, it's never really explained. We see that, you know, that these people think that farming somehow is bad for climate. I don't know how they figure that one out, but they have. You know, if you pay scientists enough money, they will give you evidence for anything you like. And so we have to try to guess what they're doing. But my guess will be that they will create a food scarcity and that they will end up enforcing food rationing, and that food rationing will be used as a force to coerce people to accept their digital currencies, because they'll say like, okay, you can go pick up your weekly ration of protein and carbohydrates and vitamins, but you have to have, you have to have this social credit score and this digital money account with which to pay for these rations. And so if you don't have it, no food for you. So this will, in their mind, this will coerce people into accepting this central bank issued digital currency, because it will be the difference between eating and not eating. Now, will they be successful with this is a different question altogether, you know, because, you know, when people find themselves under too much repression, people always create gray markets and black markets. where, you know, you'll be able to find stuff, but you'll have to have some kind of purchasing power to acquire them. So, you know, people with real assets, like maybe a silver coin, gold coin, useful skills, you know, like if you can fix somebody's car or, you know, repair somebody's shoes or fix their roof, maybe you'll be able to acquire things. But I think that if they're successful at implementing these central bank digital currencies, we're in a lot of trouble, because I think that engineered famine is what they're deliberately doing, or at least that's what all the policies that they're implementing are pointing towards. And it's, you know, it's not being explained. So there, you see these Pacific Union Pacific rail cards diminishing. You see these oligarchs buying up land. You see food processors reducing output. It's not being explained. Why is this done exactly? Do we have too much food? Is it a problem for us? Do we need food inflation on top of all other kinds of inflation? Wouldn't it be good to produce more food, to diminish food inflation, to make it more affordable for people? None of this is being explained. This is just being done over everybody else's head by whatever parasite class is in charge, and I think we can guess who they are. You know, even though I'm not referring to Joe Biden administration, they are just the errand boys for them. But I'm talking about the international banking cartel, because this is being done not just in the United States. This is being done across the Western world. So yeah, we're in trouble, and I think that's why you're noticing what you're noticing.
Alex, are you with me?
Yeah, I am. I finished.
Okay, sorry. I got disconnected from our link, so I missed about the last 20 or 30 seconds of the point you were making, if you don't mind reiterating what you were saying.
No, so basically I was just saying that, you know, we see these these very bizarre policies being implemented and carried out, and none of it is being explained. So we have to guess what the game is and what the agenda is, because it's all going to break over our heads. And it's being coordinated across the Western world. It's not just the United States. It's being done in Canada. It's being done in all of Western Europe. And so the policy is obviously being coordinated. It's being done for a purpose, and we can only guess what the purpose is. But we have to be prepared for a pushback, and we have to start developing contingency plans at the grassroots. We have to actually stand up and fight for our right to raise our own crops and to grow our own food and to supply what is being taken off the market by the, you know, by the establishment.
Yes, absolutely. Self-sufficiency and agency have never been more important than they are right now. And in my analysis, it seems like the COVID-19 project, which is still very much ongoing in a lot of ways, wasn't quite successful in getting the universal system they want in place. You know, there has been and is increasing and continues to be increasing resistance to the injections, to mask mandates and the like. And it seems like that project hit a dead end as far as corralling people into a social credit type of system. And it seems that now the globalists are going for broke with a controlled economic demolition. And of course, using what's happening in Ukraine as cover for that. And it's interesting to note as well that while there's no explanation made for moves that are being made, such as that by Union Pacific, there's no real explanation given for why Western economies or Western nation states collectively continue to pump weaponry into Ukraine to the tune of billions of dollars and make no call whatsoever for any kind of negotiated peace or even just negotiation and just a sit down. You and I have spoken about this in the past, that there are certain parties that want and need this conflict in Ukraine to continue. So I just wanted to note the striking parallel there between the lack of explanation for moves that are being made economically and the lack of explanation outside of we need to help Ukraine, quote unquote, defend itself, the lack of explanation for why Ukraine is just being injected over and over with military weaponry, with lethal aid. It's really astounding to see. And again, it's remarkable that this international banking cartel, which is above the World Economic Forum, we should be clear about that. I think the World Economic Forum is sort of a PR arm of this international banking cartel. You know, they're really just going for it at this point. And one thing I want to get your take on is that if you look at the World Economic Forum's website and you see who is involved with them, of course, you'll see people like Trudeau, you'll see people like Macron, but you never see really serious players like Timothy Geithner, for example, like central bankers. And you never see big globalist law firms like Kirkland and Ellis, for example, affiliating themselves with the World Economic Forum. And I don't know exactly what to make of that. And we have about 2 minutes before we have to take another quick break, but what is your take on that? Because a lot of people point to the World Economic Forum as driving a lot of what's happening, but I'm not so sure that they're as key of a player as they're made out to be.
Well, I think that the World Economic Forum is you know, a lot of people who go there are aspirants. You know, they want to be part of the power network, but they're not. There's a very narrow circle of people who are actually people with any serious power in the World Economic Forum. And I know that from a testimony. Right now, I can't remember the name of the person, but like I read quite a bit of his interviews and articles in the from back the 80s and the 90s when a lot of these agendas were being developed, and they were even talking about rounding up most of the participants of the World Economic Forum. Unfortunately, I can't give you very precise information about it at this time, but it's a, you know, like it's partly a think tank, it's partly a get together, it's partly a way to recruit future leaders and collaborators, and it's a way to communicate the message and the agenda to the relevant constituencies who will be called upon to implement this agenda, because this all of these changes aren't going to make themselves. You have to mobilize a lot of let's call it powerful people in the government bureaucracies and finance and corporations all around the world to make this agenda stick. And so I think that's the purpose that the World Economic Forum serves, but I agree that the power, the real power, is above them.
Yes, absolutely. So I want to obviously continue this discussion and dig into several more things after this quick break. So more with Alex Craner, ladies and gentlemen, after this.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on Saturday, May 21st. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison has called the federal election for the 21st of May. While the Prime Minister has performed dreadfully and is despised by many, even in his own party, the Labor Party opposition offers no substantial political change. Increasing voter dissatisfaction is now acknowledged even in the mainstream media, so the minor parties and independents will be the ones to watch. Minor parties will have the biggest impact in the Senate, but a number of House seats could fall to a minor party candidate or independent in a three-way race with preference flows. Such a scenario is possible in the New South Wales seat of Hunter, which has been held by Labor since 1910, but One Nation is a serious contender, with the Labor Party deserting its blue-collar base in this electorate with a strong economic dependence on coal mining. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Suck it up.
It's not a big deal.
Snap out.
Just get over it.
We've all heard it. But if you're experiencing extreme stress, it's not just in your head. It can affect your entire body because toxic stress can hurt us physically without us even knowing it. If you've lost a job, worry about your next meal, or have trouble making it through the day, if you're feeling the effects of stress, we can help. Text STRESS to 211-211 to find a solution.
TMT.
I'm tired of it.
I don't know where to begin.
Everybody's tired of it.
TMT.
I call it the Oh My God virus.
Why do we give them the power?
Absolutely stupid.
Of course, it's ridiculous.
Then it just goes along with everything else.
For them to actually mandate a vaccine.
Get the straight talk from us.
Time for us to be bold and be strong.
TMT.
And I wanted to thank you for that.
Telling the truth is the only mandate we believe in.
When you get into the facts and logic and reason thing, it drives me crazy because you're right.
TMT Radio.
I just was calling to give you my 2 cents.
TMT Radio.live.
Welcome back to Perspective. I am Jesse Zerwell, your host for the rest of the hour, and I've been speaking with Alex Craner. And just before the break, we were talking about the World Economic Forum and the policy, if you will, that it distributes on behalf of the international banking cartel. And just before that, we talked a bit about central bank digital currencies, or CBDCs, which may very well be in the pipeline for a lot of us. And Alex, I know you and I have spoken about this before, and I think that it's an ongoing conversation that we need to continue having as we suss out what's happening. But of course, there's been a lot of talk about Russia moving to a CBDC system along with China, and a lot of people who are saying that that's definitely going to happen don't seem to have a very full understanding of how CBDCs work, or how they will be implemented, how the central banks are inextricably tied to creating and issuing those CBDCs, or if they're even aware of the fact that central banks are privately owned. So it's not Putin who's going to decide if CBDCs are implemented in Russia. It's going to be the central bankers, just like it's going to be here in the West. So I wanted to get your updated read on that, if you will, with regard to the CBDCs that may or may not be coming to Russia. And I think a pivotal question we have to ask when analyzing this is, who owns the Russian central bank? Who is in a position to make that decision? And across the board, whether it's in Russia, whether it's in China, whether it's in Western empire, what is the CBDC going to be pegged to? What is going to back it? So what's your take on all of that?
Well, I think that it's not so important who owns the central bank, because allegedly Russian central bank, I don't really know that this is true, but this is what people say. Allegedly, the Russian central bank is owned by the Rothschilds, or at least what they're saying is that it's 50% owned by the Rothschilds. What's important is who controls the central bank. You know, nominally, the Bank of England is publicly owned by the British people, but they don't control it. It's controlled by private interests. So by who controls it, we literally come to the point of who has the monopoly on force and repression in a given nation. So the problem for the Western
world, or the true sovereign power, you could say.
Exactly. So our problem in the West is that the bankers have the sovereign control, and they have over centuries, since the battle of Waterloo at least, and probably earlier than that, they have cultivated the secret police and intelligence services, who are the people who can, you know, break your kneecaps, kidnap your children, or threaten you with any kind of violence if you don't obey their command. And we have seen that very recently in a very stark example, when you had in the United States, you had a judge, Carmen Segarra, I think was in New Jersey. She was in charge of a court case against Deutsche Bank for money laundering. Mm-hmm. And well, somebody dispatched an assassin to her house, killed her son, and severely wounded her husband. She survived because she just happened to have gone out for some little errand at the time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you may have all the legitimate structures of a modern state in place, but you know, you cannot depend on the rule of law if somebody can, with impunity, assassinated or threatened public officials. I don't know if many people noticed, but for example, during the hearings for the confirmation of the judge, one of the Supreme Court judges, not the man who was nominated by Donald Trump. His name escapes me right now, but it was
Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah, that's right, Brett Kavanaugh. And Then Jonathan Turley went on TV and gave a very sober assessment, which favorable to Brett Kavanaugh. Well, you know, he and his family were receiving life threats to their life over the phone. So this is our reside. Like, who has the monopoly on this kind of power? You know, we're coming to bare knuckles politics. In Russia, this is definitely the government and the president, which is, you know, Vladimir Putin and his cabinet. And so, you know, the central bank can try to do this and that, but if they receive a phone call from Vladimir Putin or one of his cabinet ministers, they have no choice but to do as they're told. And this was very obvious in 2014. What happened is there was again an attack on the Russian economy when they knocked down the price of oil, which was trading at about $110 a barrel. And then in 2014, it started collapsing. And by the late 2015, early 2016, the price of oil was $40 a barrel. And so this, they coordinated this attack. They ramped up oil production and they persuaded Saudi Arabia to massively increase oil production and other OPEC members. And so the ruble started to crash. And the central bank, with the same Nyabulina, who is the central bank governor now, started selling off the assets to buy a ruble to support the exchange rate of the ruble, which mm-hmm. is exactly the last thing you should do, because these currency rescues never work. And what they do end up accomplishing is that you sell off at fire sale prices your real assets like gold and silver and hard currencies. And right. So Vladimir Putin stopped her right there. He says, stop rescuing the ruble. Don't do that. And she did.
Mm-hmm.
So the central bank, the Bank of Russia, stopped dead in its track and let the ruble crash.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, that crash was very short-lived and it started to reverse itself. But it shows you in a real-life example that even supposing that it is correct that it's a Rothschild-owned central bank, that is not relevant. What's relevant is who really has power in a given nation. And so in Russia, that's clearly Vladimir Putin and his government and his, his party, people around him. In the West,
right.
That's clearly the bankers who control our secret police, even things like the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, the MI6, GCHQ, the Justice Department, the National Security Agency. It's ultimately the banking interests that control those agencies. And that's why when there's a real attack on a bank like Deutsche Bank, even if it's conducted through the legitimate structures of power, they can just dispatch an assassin to the judge's house. And that teaches a lot of other judges and prosecutors really stark lessons of what's allowed to be done and what's not allowed to be done. So going back to the digital currencies, my very strong impression is that the digital currency technology is not ready. They are, they understand what they want to accomplish, but they have no idea of how exactly to accomplish it. That's a very mm-hmm. complex project. One thing that I have understood from a whistleblower from the World Health Organization, I can't recall her name right now, but she said that this project was planned for 2050. And then it was moved up to 2030. And then
is it Astrid Stuckelberger?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
So it was moved up to 2020.
She's been sounding the alarm for quite some time, too, about the WHO's pandemic treaty, which is a whole other Correct. Conversation unto itself.
But exactly. But it's all related. It's all part of the same agenda,
Absolutely.
On the one hand, they're attacking Russia. On the other hand, they're attacking the populations of their own nations and corralling us into some kind of tightly controlled matrix. So, the purpose of the digital currencies is that, the whole point of them is that they are programmable. And that's why they're so hung up on AI, because, they want to have ability to micromanage, you know, like when they say you go to the store to buy some meat and they say like, oh, Mr. Zura, well, you know, you've exceeded your weekly allowance of protein, so this purchase will not be approved. So, you know, like they the idea is to be able to micromanage us, to be able to punish us for smallest infractions, for to be able to force our complete and total obedience, and to destroy any kind of dissent and resistance to their agenda. And so the central bank digital currencies would serve that purpose, but I think that they're very, very far from having a working system in place, and that they're very far from being able to develop one that actually functions. And so today we're seeing digital currencies implemented in small countries in the developing world. And I think that these are, you know, kind of petri dishes for testing and for you know, working their way up the learning curve. In the West, I know that already as late as 2019, that the head of the Bank of International Settlements, Augustin Karstens, said in one interview that they have not even begun to work on a central bank digital currency. So it's going to be a long shot, and I don't know how they're going to work out their problem, but I feel that the whole agenda is kind of coming apart.
Right. And it seems like they're trying to compensate for that lack of infrastructure, for that lack of knowledge of how to implement a CBDC system. They're trying to compensate for that right now with the all-out destruction of traditional economies, or as we've known them to be, traditional economies. And it seems that in trying to do so, they're also trying to create new markets. And one example of that is what was announced at COP26 by the likes of Mark Carney and another individual, a Finnish fellow whose name escapes me right now. And this was the announcement of basically the marketization of the global commons. And Matthew Errett and Tom Longo, whom I know you are familiar with, they're colleagues of yours, they have said that that is about depopulation. And I absolutely agree with that. But I think too that it's also about a desperate scramble to create new markets, to create new capital, in this case, almost literally out of thin air, because they need capital to survive. It really is follow the money at the end of the day. So we have about a minute and a half left. So I just want to get your response to that before we wrap up.
Well, basically, what they, you know, when you say they need capital, you know, we have to be precise here, because, you know, they can, many people think that capital is money. That's not the problem. They can print up any quantity of money that they want. The problem is, what do you buy with that money? What they need and what they're desperately short of is collateral. And so for them, the attempt to financialize, to monetize the commons, is a scramble to create new collateral. Because whatever currency they come up with will very quickly become worthless if it isn't backed by some kind of productive collateral. You know, like if you find oil in the ground, and then you know that over the coming so many years, you'll be able to pump out so many thousands of barrels of oil per day, and you know that this oil has a certain value. Well, that's collateral, you know, like on the basis of that, you can financialize that. You can issue cash against that. And you can sell it for cash.